that if he has to go contrary to the whole world for the sake of God, he will do it, and do it alone. He does not care what others think of him. Normally, when someone speaks ill of us or tries to harm us, we instinctively want to appease our ego rather than please God, and so we feel the urge to retaliate. But if we give in to this urge, we hurt not only someone else, but ourselves as well. For when we are angry or resentful, we cut ourselves off from the thought of God. Therefore, all the great spiritual teachers have taught, as Christ did, not to retaliate, not to resist evil, but to pray for those who revile and persecute us. Of course, perfect non-resistance cannot be followed by all. For a man who does not live in a state of God consciousness, who sees evil, it is a duty to resist evil. For him, non-resistance would not be a virtue, but an excuse for hypocrisy or cowardice. Before an individual is ready to turn the other cheek, he must be spiritually evolved. He must have attained purity of heart. This is discussed in greater detail in Chapter 3. Only an illumined soul, one who sees God in all beings, can maintain perfect patience, forbearance, and tranquility in the midst of the conflicts and contradictions of life. Throughout the history of religion, we find such illumined souls, saints and divine incarnations who lived the ideal of non-resistance and forgiveness. Christ praying on the cross, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," is one of the greatest and most famous examples. In our own age, Sri Ramakrishna exemplified the same ideal, as the following incident illustrates. A priest at the Dakshineswar temple garden, where Sri Ramakrishna was living, became jealous because Mathur Babu, the manager of the temple estate, was fond of Sri Ramakrishna and would go to any trouble to see to his comfort. This priest thought that Sri Ramakrishna had cast a magic spell on Mathur to bring him under his control. Again and again he begged Sri Ramakrishna to reveal to him the secret formula for his success. The master told him repeatedly that he had used no occult powers, but the priest did not believe him. One day, when Sri Ramakrishna was alone in his room, absorbed in the consciousness of God, the priest entered unobserved and kicked and beat him until he was bleeding. Sri Ramakrishna did not mention the incident to anyone until much later, after the priests had been asked to leave the temple for another reason. When he told Mathur about it, the latter explained, "Father, why didn't you let me know sooner? I would have chopped off his head." Sri Ramakrishna replied, "That's why I didn't tell you. It was not his fault. He sincerely believed that I controlled you by a magic spell. I am to blame, because I could not convince him that I was telling the truth." Christ tells us that the reward for those who are persecuted for God's sake is heaven. And so the reward of the illumined soul who does not react to any injury done to him is immediate, because he knows that heaven is always present within him as well as without, even in this life. He sees God as Atman, dwelling within his own heart. He sees God as Brahman, pervading the whole universe. He worships God in every creature. People may think that the persecuted saint is suffering. They do not realize that his mind, absorbed in God, has transcended the physical consciousness, and that the saint, therefore, has overcome the tribulations of this world even while living on earth. In the words of the Bhagavad Gita, "His mind is dead to the touch of the external. It is alive to the bliss of the Atman. Because his heart knows Brahman, his happiness is forever." Chapter 2 The Salt of the Earth Matthew 5:13-37 Ye are the salt of the earth. But if the salt have lost his savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is thenceforth good for nothing, but to be cast out, and to be trodden under foot of men. In India, when a disciple comes to a teacher, the teacher tries, first of all, to give him a firm faith in himself, and a feeling that weakness and cowardice and failure have no part in his true nature. In the second book of the Bhagavad Gita, almost the first words which Sri Krishna, the divine incarnation, says to Arjuna are, What is this weakness? It is beneath you. Shake off this cowardice. Just as you can see the contents of a cupboard through its glass doors, a great teacher can see into your heart. But he does not condemn you for your faults and weaknesses. He knows human nature, because he realized that when you feel weak and depressed, you cannot achieve anything, cannot grow spiritually. He gives you confidence in yourself. The teacher sees not merely what you are at present, but also the capacities you will develop. Many years ago, a young Swami who was about to leave India to preach in America went to see Swami Turiyananda. When this great disciple of Sri Ramakrishna praised the young monk highly, the latter protested, But sir, I don't have any of the qualities you are praising. Then Turiyananda said, What do you know about yourself? I see what you are going to unfold. We all have the power to unfold the divinity latent within us, but the teacher gives us confidence in our ability to do it. At the same time, we must remember the Beatitude. Blessed are the meek. Meekness and faith in oneself must go together. The faith which Christ instilled in his disciples by calling them the salt of the earth was not faith in the lower self, the ego, but faith in the higher self, faith in God within. With such faith comes self-surrender, freedom from any sense of ego. Sri Ramakrishna illustrated this truth with an incident from Hindu mythology. He told how Radha, the foremost of the shepherdesses, whom Sri Krishna loved best, became apparently very egotistical. When the other shepherdesses complained to Sri Krishna about her, he suggested that they ask Radha. Certainly I have an ego, said Radha. But whose ego is it? It is not mine. For everything I have belongs to Krishna. The person who has surrendered everything to God has no ego in the ordinary sense. He cannot be vain or proud. He has strong faith in the true self within him, which is one with God. This saying of Jesus, Ye are the salt of the earth, reminds me of a saying my master used to quote to us. You have the grace of God, you have the grace of the Guru, the spiritual teacher, and you have the grace of God's devotees. But for the lack of one grace, you may be cast out. What is that one grace? It is the grace of one's own mind, the will to struggle for perfection. If, in spite of all those graces which would otherwise make us the salt of the earth, we lack the grace of our minds, we may be trodden under foot of men. We must strive hard to surrender ourselves wholeheartedly to God in order that the divinity within us may become manifest. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. A great spiritual teacher gathers pure souls around him and teaches them not only by word of mouth, but by actual transmission of spirituality. He does not simply give them self-confidence. He actually illumines the hearts of his disciples and makes them the light of the world. For only those who have obtained illumination through union with the light which dwells in the hearts of all can become the light of the world. Only such illumined ones are fit to teach mankind. Only they can carry on the message of a divine incarnation. When Sri Ramakrishna met anyone who wished to teach the word of God, he would ask, "Have you the divine commission?" Only he who has seen God can receive his commission, his direct command to teach. Religion degenerates when taught by unillumined men. It is no good relying on a degree at a theological college. Books cannot give illumination. One may have studied scriptures, history, philosophy. One may be versed in theology, dogmas, and doctrines, and give wonderful sermons, and yet be a baby when it comes to spiritual life. In order to transform people's lives, one must first light one's own candle. According to Vedanta, there are two kinds of knowledge. The first, the lower, consists of academic knowledge, such as science and philosophy. Even knowledge of the scriptures is considered lower knowledge. The second, the higher knowledge, is the immediate perception of God. A man who is enlightened by this higher knowledge does not need encyclopedic information in order to expound the scriptures. He teaches from inner experience. Swami Abhutananda, one of Sri Ramakrishna's disciples, was such an enlightened man. Among his brother monks, he was unique in that he had had no formal education at all. He came to Sri Ramakrishna as a young servant boy who did not even know how to sign his name. Sri Ramakrishna tried to teach him the Bengali alphabet, but Abhutananda could not manage to read even the first vowel correctly. And yet we who were privileged to meet him in his later life saw the wisdom of this unlettered man. One day, several young monks came across a difficult passage in the Upanishads, the ancient scriptures of the Hindus. They could not understand.